Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'm joined by Kerry White. Kerry did a TED Talk down Tralee called The Road Less Travelled to Motherhood, where she shared her story about becoming a mum just 2 months shy of 50 on her own. Good afternoon, Kerry.
Hello, Ray.
Freya is your beautiful daughter.
She is.
What age is Freya now?
She turned 5 on the 16th of January.
Right.
Yeah, she's amazing. My mother's looking after her now. Thanks, Mum.
So school must be soon, is it? Big school, as they call it.
Big school, yes. It'll be September. So she's in a wonderful preschool. So the hours are the same as school, but she's well ready to go to school because she has the January birthday. I could have gone last September, but I decided to wait. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's great.
So where do you start with your story? Where do you think we should start?
Yeah. Oh, thanks. I suppose why am I being open about it is probably where I would love to start, because a lot of people ask me that. And I suppose I never planned to be open about this, Ray. It's just kind of unfolded since Freya was a baby. It's a very personal journey. I talk about things, obviously, a lot of people are not going to talk about. And that's another big reason why I would like to be why I am being open about it. Hence the TEDx talk. So when Freya was a baby, I suppose I had a bit more time because she was napping. She was in my arms a lot. And I was, you know, let's face it, I was probably high on hormones, luckily. And Doris had put out on my Instagram how I became a mother despite my circumstances. So despite my age and the fact that I did it alone. And there was a big response. So I was posting more on my Instagram then in a very natural way. And women started to contact me who were kind of in that space where I was for about 10 years. You know, their stars hadn't aligned. They hadn't met their life partner, all of that stuff. But yet they still felt that, you know, they had a big longing to be a mother. Or perhaps they just wanted to explore it. Maybe they thought that it was too late. And then I pop up and they think, OK, that's interesting. That might be inspiring. Or maybe they just want to have a chat and close that door.
Mm.
So I'm not there to, because I support women now. Yeah. So, yeah.
So your stars hadn't aligned.
Exactly. Yeah.
So although you'd been in relationships for whatever reason, both you didn't want the same thing at the same time.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So in your 20s?
Yeah, my 20s, I was in a long-term relationship. I was living in France from the age of 20. So basically all through my 20s, I was in a serious relationship where most of my friends were single. But I wasn't ready for all of that stuff at that stage. Settling down, I had a lot more travelling to do and exploring life. And and then I suppose early mid-30s rocked up and naively I thought, OK, I'm ready now. Yeah, so let's get the show on the road. But life didn't work out that way. And I found myself heading for 40, which was, you know, coming along quite fast now. And I have to be honest, I had my head completely buried. I was also working in health because I worked at the World Health Organization for almost 10 years. In women's health, in all sorts of medical projects. So, you know, it's a strange thing for me that I wasn't taking my fertility more seriously.
Okay.
I was hoping that things would just happen naturally. And I was focusing on the rare, but, you know, often celebrity stories of women who got pregnant in, you know, later in life. At this stage, it was early 40s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I was hanging on to hope.
Were you in a situation where you could have got pregnant in your early 40s? You know what I mean? Were you with a...
Yeah, I was...
in a relationship?
Well, I had, you know, a couple of relationships around that time and... I probably didn't realise that my biological clock was screaming at me at that stage. But looking back now, I wonder if those relationships, you know, they were probably not the best choices because we can make women often, I think, you know, that can be a very loud sound, that biological clock. So things just weren't right for one reason or the other. And you know, I didn't want to compromise too much either. And, you know, people had kind of said, would you not go alone? You know, at this age, I was 41. I even went to a clinic in Spain with a good friend just to get some tests and to kind of explore it. So I was open to it and I wasn't ready. It just seemed like such a far-fetched...
What was the option there that was different to the one you ultimately went for?
Yeah, so, yes. Right, good question. So at that stage, Ray, I was still able to pursue motherhood using my own eggs, but with donor sperm. And the clinic I met with in Spain said, but you better not hang around, you better hurry up. And I just kept hoping. I began another relationship, you know, and I hope maybe this is it. So like my dream was always riding on somebody else, really, which, you know, I look back now, of course, I kind of think it's a bit crazy that I thought like that. But that's where I was.
I'm a man.
Yeah, yeah.
You may have noticed.
Yes.
You're a woman. But this sort of want or need or urge to have children.
Yes.
How strong was that for you?
It was very strong. I never questioned the fact that I wanted to be a mother. It was just part of me. It was never in question. It was just, just wait for the right man and at the right time. So that was very strong. But I couldn't separate motherhood from a romantic partnership. And as I mentioned in my TEDx, that was a very, very important point for me, is, it was alien to me. So that's where I was then. I had my head buried. I was still hoping things would work out. I guess I didn't feel that it was a possibility for me emotionally. Right. Technically, I knew it was.
But from your early 40s, you were playing this out in your brain, that you might do it alone.
I was getting ready to, but it took me that long.
What happened in the intervening years?
It just took me so long. And I was, you know, in another relationship with a good man here. Wasn't as much his dream as mine. But so for me to get the clarity to make the decision, I said, I have to go for this alone. I was trying to put it to rest. I was trying to, you know, make the most of my life, which, you know, was great. But I can't even describe it. You know, I just had to try.
And how did you get clarity, though?
I got a lot of help. I've been working in the field of health and well-being for more than 10 years, started at WHO. I'd been coaching groups and corporates and teaching the mind-body practices that I have trained in, like going back 20 years. And so I had a lot of tools and a lot of awareness, but and I still couldn't really get that courage to go for it. It was courage for me to go on my own. I was clear I wanted it. So I found a few amazing women who came along at the right time to help. So one was an amazing therapist, Katrina. Another was an amazing women's coach, Mary Kennedy, and a very good friend of mine. And I was also doing a wonderful coaching course at the time to consolidate my work that I was doing and bring everything together. And that got me in touch with my values and who I was.
And did you speak to anybody who'd been through the process?
A few. I knew a couple of women, but like where I had lived previously in Switzerland, but I didn't know anybody very well. I didn't know anyone who ticked the box of the age, solo and using double donation. Yes. Like there was a few big things that I had to get over in my head. So
can you talk to us a little bit about then, you know, say the double donation?
Sure.
So your plan was to get an egg donor and a sperm donor and then carry the embryo.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So
you had to get over the fact that this baby, you would have no shared
genetic. Exactly. Yeah. And there's a term for that. It's called genetic grief. You know, it's, you know, we're speaking about it more. Genetic grief. It's a term I've heard a lot for women who've pursued double donation and like me have their kids. But maybe it's just that time that they had to let go of the dream of having babies through their own genes, because it's the most and it's often the only way imaginable. And that's the way it was for me. So that was a huge process to kind of, you know, unpeel the layers of like, well, I want to be a mother. I don't just want a mini me. And when I looked back through my families on both paternal and maternal side, both my parents are in their 80s now and they're a wonderful help. And but, you know, I was like, OK, well, maybe I don't want that trait coming to me from my father's side or my mother's side. Yeah. I'm going to have a blank canvas and I'm going to have an...
It's not a blank canvas as such because they're the genetic makeup of the two donors.
Okay, yes, but the gene impact is not, or influence is not everything, you know, in the makeup of a person. But it didn't matter to me anyway because, you know, there is a process that goes on in a woman's womb when she's carrying a baby through donor eggs. And, you know, that epigenetics factor does show that there is a strong influence on the environment that the baby is in from conception. So anyway, but that wasn't even important. It was nice to know. And I also worked with counsellors with the clinic that I used. So I couldn't have been more ready. And I had worked through that sadness and grief I had.
But still, I would imagine when it came to choosing your donors, it must have been a big deal, was it?
Look, this is the hardest thing. Like the women I speak to all, like this is really difficult. It's surreal. In the talk, I describe it as being surreal. It wasn't unlike online dating, to be honest. For me, I got to choose. Some women and couples who pursue this kind of way to become pregnancy, they don't get to choose. They get certain embryos from a clinic. But that wasn't the case for me. I had a bit of knowledge, actually quite a bit of knowledge on each. And I saw photos of them when they were babies. But it was a gut feeling. At the end of the day, it was just a kind of a knowing that helped me make my choice.
But do you mind me asking how much information, like there's a file on each of the donors?
A big file on each of them.
Yes.
I was showing Freya actually for the first time the photographs of her donors the other day.
Really? How did she react to that?
Look, she's very curious and very open and she knows she's like... Like I say to her, like I had to go really far to get you. You know, I had to go and here's where I went on the aeroplane. St. Petersburg. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I found that clinic and it was an amazing clinic. So
the chats with Freya then? Because
I have started from an early stage.
Okay, what have you said to her? So you had to go far, obviously, to get her. That's
Mummy was a bit old. My eggs didn't work anymore. There's books. I've had to get out of my comfort zone a lot. I'm here talking about it.
Yes.
It's getting out of my comfort zone. It's very personal, but like I want to share it because there's a lot of people in that space that just don't know where to go. And it's a very silent kind of a place, an isolating place to be.
You talk about shame a lot.
Shame. Well, a lot. I mentioned it in my TEDx.
Yes, and you mentioned it when you were talking to Roisin Ingle as well.
Yeah, I did. Well, the shame of not being a mother when you kind of want to be, it's very internal feeling because that's what shame is. It's internal. Nobody was making me feel like that. So shame comes from how we're feeling. So, yes, like, you know, I would feel uncomfortable at around from the age of like 40, especially at that question, do you have kids? Sure. You know, there's a lot of assumptions made. And I didn't know it was that feeling of shame or embarrassment at the time, but that's what it was. So we're humans. Yeah. We experience these feelings, right?
And so back to the file then. So you were presented with a number of files for the egg donor and the sperm donor. And you have to choose.
Yeah.
It's an odd thing, isn't it?
It is an odd thing.
Yeah. And was there any one particular thing that swung you?
Yeah, well... The female donor was kind of neutral, really. There was nothing special about that drew me to her. But similar physical characteristics, possibly colouring or whatever. But the male donor was like definitely touched me and actually made me quite emotional because they both write a handwritten note and he just sounded like somebody I would like to know as a person. And it was like he, as I said on Roisin's podcast, it was like he got inside my head. He was saying, if you're here now, it's because life hasn't gone the way you would have hoped. And you're obviously a very resilient person and I know you're going to be okay, you know, because you're making a tough decision. Life doesn't always go the way we want. But he was just quite philosophical and it spoke to me. And that kind of said, well, if he brings out that response in me, I'm going to go with that.
Right. And what are the legalities around him? Are they? you're eye rolling me there.
No. So the male donor is an open donor.
Which means what?
It means that if he's still around and if he hasn't changed his mind, that Freya can contact him. Okay. He's from a
When
she's 18. Right. He's from a well-known European sperm bank.
Right.
It's kind of strange to be talking about this now, yeah. But the female was from Russian jurisdiction, and she's closed. So so there'll be no possibility for Freya to contact her.
Right.
So if she wants, so that's the way it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, but I just wanted to say something else that I feel is quite important. I am considered the biological mother.
Yes.
Yes.
Because you carried Freya.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was it like holding Freya for the first time?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I fully realised she was there until she was there. It was all surreal. I had a wonderful pregnancy. I felt great. There was no medical reason for me to have a C-section, but I made that decision because of my age. It was just wonderful. You know, she was great. She was healthy. It was pretty special, really. And I think all the staff there were pretty touched as well, because it was quite a special story, and it was wonderful. Yeah.
What were the chats you had with yourself? You know, because huge decision.
Yes,
and
the hardest.
Whenever we make big decisions, we try and imagine what life would be like after we make that decision, don't we? All the permutations of what might happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, you're asking about what kind of chats do I have now?
About the future. So, you're there and you're living your life and then you're going through this and you're grappling with it and you're talking to a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
And then you must be imagining all the time, make this decision, what will life look like afterwards?
Okay, so that's a great question, and thank you for that, because I had to get to the point where I knew that if I didn't try it, that I would regret it. It's again one of my points in my talk. I would regret this. I don't know the outcome of this. So I know that when I made the decision that I was going to give this my all, I was going to have, you know, like a few shots at this over this period of time. And that was exciting to me, because I knew I was going to be moving forward with my life in one way or the other. I knew that I would, well, I felt, who knows, I felt that if I didn't try it, I would bring that regret with me. Okay, that's one thing. The other thing is that I realised that I was enough. And that's kind of almost how my talk ends, is that, like, I was good enough to be a mother, and I was enough, because in my head I needed to do this with a partner. And I had to realise, I had to take that journey of self-discovery myself to realise, well, I can reshape what my life looks like. I want to be a mother. And I managed to, you know, repackage my definition of motherhood.
Because for a lot of women, it never happens for them.
It never happens, It never happens. Look, I have lots of friends, a few very good friends, Ray, that it's not going to happen for them. And, you know, they struggled with this at a certain time, maybe when the time the fertility window was closing. And maybe also when I said I'm going for this. Like, I see those women now and other women, and they've moved on. Like, they are thriving. They have made peace with it. They maybe have very important connections with other people in their lives and with Freya. So I'm so grateful to my friends for that. So we never know what is around the corner in life. But if I can help inspire people to, you know, get brave, listen to that inner voice within, explore, reframe, find role models, get uncomfortable and look at life as an adventure. And, you know, take action. Don't stay in limbo like I did for almost 10 years.
I came to fatherhood late.
Yes.
And I regularly do the maths.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you do the maths as well. What age will I be when, you know, blah, 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 is 21 or whatever?
Yeah. Look, it's something that it does stay on my mind, especially at night when we're there on our own. I think about it a lot. I do my best to talk about that with people who are close to me, and Freya has some very important people who are close to her as well. But we don't, I look at both my parents, they're both in their 84 to be precise. They both helped me a lot. Like my mother had Freya last night because I had a rare night out at a wonderful hothouse flowers gig with friends. Thank you very much. So Freya had a sleepover with her. My father and his great wife, lovely wife, Bernie, they're like her other grandparents. They helped me. My parents are both working. They're both travelling. I'm very lucky, very, very lucky. Mm. So I focus on them. My health is very important to me, Ray. It's kind of my business as well. So if I can, you know, continue to be as healthy as I can, that I take that very seriously. That's all I can do.
We never know what's going to happen, do we?
We don't know what's
going to happen, yeah. So you're talking about it because you want people, if they're in a similar situation, to know that this is an option. This is an option.
Exactly. It is an option. Yeah. It could be an option.
I have a lot of the same feelings your speaker had. I'm 41, 34 weeks pregnant with donor sperm.
Okay.
Lovely listen to her story, says that person.
Thank you.
I better give you your full title, Kerry. So as well as being mother to Freya, you're workplace health and wellbeing facilitator and motherhood clarity coach.
That's right, yes.
So you talk to women who are considering motherhood.
Yeah. So I've extended my work now to individuals and I will be extending it to groups, that coaching and well-being work and resilience and all those practical things that I've talked about, to supporting women on a one-on-one basis to find the clarity about whether or not they would like to take the road less traveled to motherhood or whether they would like to consciously let go of that, but just to move on rather than stay in limbo because it can be really hard. So that's one of the things I do. Yeah. And do speaking more as well.
So Kerry White. And if you Google Kerry, you'll
Kerry,
find
Kerry Wellbeing.
Kerry Wellbeing
is my kind Kerry of business Wellbeing. Handle. Okay. Am I able to mention TEDx?
Well, it's there. Yeah. The road less traveled. If to put in Tralee TEDx, they'll find you. Yes.
And am I able to mention the new TEDx Tralee that's coming in October that I'm not speaking at?
OK. Yes. There's a new TEDx in Tralee.
There's new TEDx Women in Tralee and they're looking for speakers in their round two.
All right.
I'd love to just put that
great.
Out there. Thank you.
Great. Kerry, thanks so much for
thanks
sharing.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Lovely to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.